He is the president of the New York Rangers and no stranger to this broadcast. John Davidson joining Hockey Central. John, how are you today?
Good. Thanks, Jeff. How are you, Brian, Justin? How's everybody?
We are well. Really quickly, you, your family, everybody in your orbit, everyone's okay?
Yeah, we're in New York, up in Westchester County, north of the city. Mm-hmm. It's gotten a lot better. The New York State people and the government, led by the governor Cuomo, they've done a great job here. And in fact, it's remarkable the support that the New Yorkers have given their game plan and protocol has worked, and it has worked to a T. It's been really good. So we're happy with that. It was a long, hard ride to get to this point. I personally know four people who have not made it through, have passed mm-hmm. away. So for a long time, when you're here, when you're pushing 1,000 people a day dying, it was hard. It was hard just to think about it. But people have stayed with it, done a great job, and going in the right direction around here for sure.
You know, through something like this, much like, you know, during lockouts, we all become, you know, amateur actuaries. During this scenario, we're all becoming sort of, you know, amateur epidemiologists in a sense. But going through the past 3 months, John, getting us to here where now we're talking about hub cities and how to get this 2014 playoff going, as a team president, what have your biggest questions and concerns been?
Well, obviously, and you hear, the first thing I'd like to say is, from what I understand, both the NHL and the Players Association have worked in unison to try to get through this thing as a group. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that type of cooperation, you've got nothing. So leadership on both sides, to me, should be applauded for working through what they've been able to work through. It's not easy. There's a multitude of, Brian certainly knows, when you get into a regular discussion regarding all kinds of different things with the PA and the NHL, it's complicated. Then when you get into this situation, it's times 10, and they've worked hard at it. Safety of the players is what's the most important, without question. You can't think of anything else that if you're going to do something, do it right. I will say I'm about 15 minutes where I live from our training center that the Knicks and the Rangers use, and the Knicks aren't there right now. I don't know if there's a safer place in the country than walking into that place for the work they've done. Mask is mandatory. The temperature check when you go in, you go through a bunch of questions. You're tested every 2 days. It's something else. So I feel really comfortable about the league's protocol for the players and the staff and what our club's been able to execute to this point. So it's about safety for sure. It's about spread. It's about doing the right thing. And also having the understanding of how important it is to try to get something going hockey-wise for a number of different reasons.
Berkey?
So having lived in Calgary for 5 years, JD, let's go back to the Calgary Centennials. You played with some colorful characters. Bobby Nystrom, Danny Gare, Dougie Sauter.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Rogers.
I was going to go back to you when you bought your house in Calgary and your Ford F-150 was too long for the garage.
Yeah. My neighbors got a big kick out of that. I bought a Ford F-150 that didn't fit in the garage. The neighbors thought I was an idiot. But what was that like playing back in the corral?
It was fantastic. You know, I was lucky. I was a Calgary kid. And what I did was I was working at Safeway, and I think it was for $2.91 an hour. Raised enough money to get on a Greyhound bus, go to Nelson, British Columbia for a hockey school. Seth Martin was the goalie coach. 2 weeks there, went back to Calgary and heard about this camp by the Centennials, the junior team in town. So I went to it, and because I had gone to that hockey school, I was kind of in the groove, and sure enough, they liked what they saw, and then I became a part of their system. And playing junior in Calgary, growing up in Calgary, being from Calgary, it was phenomenal. That corral with the high boards, we filled that place. It was the game in town at that point in time, back in the early 70s. It was special playing with Bobby Nystrom on our team. Man, he was the big Swede, we called him, from Hinton, Alberta. He was tough as nails. I mean, we played teams like Lanny McDonald in Medicine Hat and Edmonton Oilers had Phil Russell and Tommy Bladen, and the New West team had a bunch of giants. I'm telling you, this was a man's game back in those days. You mentioned Danny Gare. Danny Gare was one of the toughest guys I've ever seen for his size. He could shoot the puck like nobody's business. He played on a line with Mike Rogers, who had a great NHL career, and Jerry Holland, who had a rocket of a shot. They were fantastic. But we filled the arena in Calgary. We had great rivalries. We had a guy by the name of Scotty Monroe running the team. The Wild Bill Hunter up in Edmonton, Cement Shoes Benny Haskins in Winnipeg, Shaky McLeod in Saskatoon, Ernie McLean, the famous Ernie McLean
Punch.
In New West. This was legendary stuff. And it's for the 2 years that I was a part of that team and playing, it was two of the best years of my life, hockey-wise. I'll never, ever, ever forget the teammates, the rivalries. Quick story, we played in Edmonton one night, got on the bus the next morning. Bearcat Murray was our bus driver. He was our trainer. He was our equipment guy. He was everything. We had to play in Saskatoon the next night. There was an ice storm. We stopped every half hour to clean off the windshield and kept going. Got into Saskatoon at 8:30 at night, played at 9:30, and the place was still full. It was just great. Fantastic stuff.
Horny.
That's amazing, John. Thanks for joining us here. I can't help but notice, but the two cities that you've been president of the operations here for major clubs are very different cities. You know, Columbus and New York City. I wonder what the difference is in the jobs when you're the president of the Blue Jackets or the president of the Rangers.
Well, you know, when I was here in New York, I was here a long time, and getting into the television world, which I just loved. And then I was given an opportunity to actually go to St. Louis with Dave Chekets and be a part of the rebuild there. And I thought about it and said, you know, I've done a lot of television. It's a great job, but I'm going to take a shot. So we went to St. Louis, moved the whole family there. And if there was 30 teams in the league, that team should have been 40th when we got there. It was a tough time. They were going through an absolute rebuild. They had sold off players and traded people like Chris Pronger. And it's a great sports city. It's a fantastic sports city. And went through the whole process. It was tough. It was hard. It was ugly. But we turned the franchise around. And then there was an ownership change in St. Louis. And Doug Armstrong, who I hired, was the GM. And he's very good at what he does. We decided that, time to move on. So Columbus called. And moved up to Columbus with my family and started there. Now, it wasn't as tough a rebuild there because they had already had some people in place. They had already made the trade. Scott Housen had made the trade for Bobrovsky, which was a blessing for sure. And another fantastic sports city, quality city to live in. I think it's maybe the most underrated city in the country. Ohio State Football Club is the number one thing in town there. But we got it going. We went through some changes. John Tortorella came in as coach and did a wonderful job in changing the culture. They now have a good hockey club for sure. They've got a ton of depth, and I loved every minute of it. Now, both were very, very different than New York. And then, you know, Columbus is on its feet. The thing showed, the opening showed up in New York, so it was full circle. I loved my time in both cities. When I did leave, and it certainly wasn't all me by any means. We had a pretty good team in both cities working together, trying to rebuild things. And Doug Armstrong does a great job in St. Louis. And Jarmo Kekalainen, who people thought I was three-quarters nuts bringing him over from Europe to be a general manager in the NHL, he's done a great job. And he continues to do a great job. So both are on their feet. Both are doing well. And I'm pretty proud of that with all the good people that I worked with.
And, John, in Columbus, you had Artemi Panarin. In New York, you have Artemi Panarin. I got to say...
Tampering.
I thought before he got to the Rangers, I had seen the best of Artemi Panarin, and then he put this season together. From your point of view, because I'm just watching just as a spectator, as a fan, as someone that covers it on television, that's the best I've seen Artemi Panarin play. Like, he's legitimate Hart Trophy consideration going away. Top three easy. Is that the best you've seen Panarin play?
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because his second year, he was in Columbus for the 2 years. His second year, everybody in Columbus, including me, wanted him to stay in Columbus, extend his contract. We tried everything. We had a dinner with the owner. We had his representative at the time come in, and we had meetings, and people in the city were putting up billboards on their own dollar trying to get him to stay. I think one company offered him vodka for life, billboards, all that type of stuff. And I think it's human nature, but he's such a good person that I think that weighed on him just a little bit. It's like the elephant in the room type of thing, knowing that he's got to make this decision. It's a lifetime decision because it's going to be an 8-year deal. So you want to be where you're going to be happy, where what you think you need for your family and your family's future to raise kids and all that type of stuff. And I've seen him do articles in various areas of the world. In fact, one time he was talking about Russia, how the country of Russia needs help in a lot of different areas, not just Moscow. And he said, you look at a city like Columbus, it's a smaller city, but it's a fantastic place to live. You know, so he's complimentary, but he wanted to make that hard decision, and he wanted to be a New York Ranger. So luckily for me, and obviously we know each other quite well, and we trust each other very well. Luckily for me, when I got here and we went through the process to try to get him to sign, we were able to make it work. Now, even people here weren't quite sure, but they do now. He makes everybody around him better every single game, every single shift. He's creative. He's a great, great talent. And I agree with what you guys said about the MVP trophy. He should be right at the top. He had an incredible season on a team that's finding itself as we move forward here. Just an incredible season.
Berkey?
So, JD, go back to last spring. Now, you guys had some people scratching their heads. You're going to lose Panarin and Bobrovsky most likely.
Yeah.
And what do you do at the deadline? You add. You go out and pay a high price to get Duchesne. You bring in Ryan Dzingel. You add Keith Kincaid. And you sweep a team that finished with 30 more regular season points than yours. That took a lot of hair on a lot of chests. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, we were down 3-0 in that first game in Tampa, and the hair was coming out of my head of what I have left. And it was almost going, you know, you're saying to yourself, man, it can't get any worse. And then start of the next period, Bobrovsky made a big, big save. I think Foligno scored a goal, and the rest is history. And the team just took off. And I think what is really important when you look at the Columbus club, even right now, is that team knows how to keep the puck out of the net. And when you have people like Seth Jones and Werenski and the big kid Gavrikov, who showed up out of Russia after playing in the K, I'm telling you, that team as a team knows how to do that. They don't have the great scoring skill that a lot of teams have, but they're physical, they're big, they know how to keep it out of the net, and they're dangerous because of that. And with Tampa, it was pretty simple in a lot of ways. I don't think you have to be a hockey rocket scientist to figure out that the team, our team at the time, me, stayed above the puck all the time. You give Tampa that 2-on-1 or that 3-on-2, they're so good, so skilled, so just dynamic that it's in your net. But you give yourself a chance if you don't give them those things. And our team would counter and do things like that, and the power play caught fire, the penalty killing was good, and the confidence level just started to soar, and away they went. It was a remarkable story. And then, of course, running into Boston, which was a great team, we won one of the first two games in that series, very nearly won both. It may have been a little bit different. The other thing to remember, too, now, if you think about this, the Columbus players, they haven't won a lot of series, but they've been very good in a lot of series that they haven't won. And they have playoff experience, quite a number of them. And that's helpful when you get into these types of situations. Even they're going to play Toronto. I expect that to be a great series. But I don't think Columbus will be intimidated. They've got experience back there. We lost to Washington. We were up 2-0 in that series. And the last game at home, I think we hit 6 goalposts and crossbars, but lost the game. They scored a fluke goal in overtime off an ankle. But the experience level for that group of players became part of their resume, which I think will help them going forward.
John, maybe you can tell us, you know, I, you have a unique background in that you've had so much success in both the media world and on the actual the hockey side. Maybe you could tell us about the differences in those positions, the highs and lows, the varying stress levels. I imagine they're quite different roles.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, but it's still hockey. You know, I think if, like even I talked to Brian Burke, who's sitting there a number of times, just getting ready for this to do this radio show. And so, I mean, he's working hard at it. I mean, if you're in the media world and you want to be good at it, you got to work at it. And you have to make your calls and get to know people and put the time in and all those different things. I remember when I was first, I retired at 29 because of injuries. My back and knees were shot. I remember moving back to Calgary after a year in TV down here and doing the Flame games, doing Oiler games, and doing Hockey Night in Canada. But I figured I was 29. I've got a chance to keep a job at hockey. I better work my ass off. In fact, I better do it a hell of a lot harder than I did when I was a player. And so every week I'd go downtown in Calgary back in the day, and I'd buy $30 and $40 worth of newspapers, haul them home, go through. I mean, these were from Toronto, from Montreal, from all over the place. There was no internet. The satellite dishes were just starting up. So I'd go through all the different hockey articles and paste them and build up books on each team so that when I did their games, I could have some knowledge. And that would help me get through things. So I look back, I thank God I worked. And it's the same, I think, for anybody, whether you're in the radio business, the TV business. If you don't work, you'll get a job, you'll work for a while, and you're gone. But if you work at it, you've got a chance to have a career out of it. So it gave me a chance to stay in the game. Madison Square Garden was good enough to let me go and do national stuff along with working for the Garden. That to me was just incredible. They were open-minded with all that stuff. I did five Olympics all over the world, able to see the world just for one reason, because it's hockey. And then getting into the management end of things, well, that's a whole new world. That's wearing the suit, and you're finding out things from ticket sales to drafting to anything that's a part of the franchise and its business. Some of it was quite shocking. I've heard more players. Here's an example. Rick Nash, former player, now is working in Columbus with the team, and he's learning a lot working with Yarmo and the group. He's just astonished at the amount that really goes into building a team and trying to put it on the ice and fill the stands with people. So it's been really good. I've had basically three different careers in it. I've loved every minute of it. I'm luckier than you know what, and I'm 45 years worth of this stuff. So what a game. What a great game.
I really do have to jump in on one thing you said there about broadcasting and doing your homework. And one of the things that I always, and I don't think I'm in the minority here, John, one of the things I always admired about you on Hockey Night in Canada, one, you could tell you did your homework, and two, you always brought new information or a story. It was almost as if, you know, you had these relationships with people in the NHL, and the league recognized, people around the league recognized how important a segment that was on Hockey Night in Canada, that they felt an obligation. They had to give you something. Like that there was some bit of information that you know what? We have to get something to Hockey Night in Canada, and John's our guy. Did it feel like that to you? Because from a viewer's point of view, JD, that's what it looked like.
Well, I just wanted to make sure I worked hard enough to keep a job, and with the love of the game that we all have. I mean, people love this game. I just when I grew up, I dreamed of being in the NHL, and I was lucky enough to have a great youth hockey life growing up in the city of Calgary. I can thank them for that. Being able to play in the Western Junior League, that was fascinating. Just I got to go see cities I never would have seen. I didn't grow up on the proper side of the tracks. It was a hard life growing up, and I got eventually to see the whole world. But I think it's about, if you don't have the passion, you're not going to work. You've got to have that. And you know, Hockey Night was a dream too. I remember growing up in Western Canada, Saturday night, we'd only catch the last two periods of the games. And we were always hoping something happened in Toronto or Montreal for the first period, maybe a long fight or something. So we'd catch the last two or three minutes of that period when hockey night came on, and then we'd see the intermission, then the second period, the intermission, third period, and we were glued and just wanted to do it. The other thing is that when you do television and you're an analyst, a color guy, say we're doing Ranger games and Wayne Gretzky's playing for us, I know that during the game you're going to have close-ups of Gretzky 5, 6, 7 times. So I would drive Wayne nuts. We'd laugh about it. But I'd go see him before games or during the practice or whatever, and I'd sit with him. I need something new. What can we talk about? Because when they show you, I can't say you've got 3 goals again. I've got to, you know. So he was fascinating. Mark Messier was fascinating. Find out where they grew up, what they did, who was the hardest player to play against, who was the toughest guy on faceoffs against you, on and on and on with that type of stuff. And I'm sure it drove them nuts. But the viewer or the listener, they deserved to hear something new about these people, because we all knew that they had 58 goals and 75 assists. But you could find stuff out and try to make it interesting. So that was kind of my – and I had to write everything down. I've got the worst memory in the world. And I used to keep stacks of paper with all this stuff, and then I could go through it next time we saw that particular team play, and did I use this or did I not use that? So it was a great world. By the way, you have to have people help you. John Shannon was a producer for me. He taught me. You just don't get into the chair and all of a sudden become a broadcaster. I was a nervous wreck. The first time I ever did an interview was with Bill Torrey, and I think the microphone chipped his teeth. My hand was shaking so bad. But you have to have people that want to help make you get better. And John Shannon, for me, was that guy of many guys, but he was the first one for sure.
Helped me a ton as well. I got all the time in the world for John Shannon. Quick, before we let you go, got about 30 seconds, JD. If it were up to you, would goaltenders still be allowed to wear 00?
No. That was, it still bugs me, to be honest with you. Phil Esposito was here. He wore 7 in Boston all that time he got here. Rod Gilbert was the legend. He wore 7. So he came to me and says, Hodgie's going to wear, instead of 8, because Steve Vickers had 8, he's going to wear 88. I'm going to wear 77 where you wear 00. Yes, sir, Mr. Esposito, whatever you want. So I did. And I got more cacti. Is that your intelligence level, you bum? And that's your not your goals against average, you bum. Got a lot of that stuff. It wasn't the smartest thing I ever did, but